Hello, and welcome to The Supply Chain from Control Risks, the specialist risk consultancy. I'm your host, Sam Tornio, and in this series of podcasts, we'll be taking a closer look at the impact of COVID-19 on supply chains. In this episode, I'll be speaking with James Lurie, director leading our labor rights practice team in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. We'll be discussing which labor rights issues businesses should be paying attention to as they navigate their way through the COVID-19 pandemic. So, James, many businesses, even those with stated human rights commitments, have seen their reputations take a hit over the treatment of workers in supply chains. As the expert in this area at Control Risks, can you tell us how this looks currently amid the pandemic?
Well, we've seen an increase in the number of clients who are concerned about human rights and labor rights in their supply chains, particularly right now during COVID-19. And they're typically concerned about issues such as inequality, safe working conditions, and treatment that constitutes modern slavery. So things such as human trafficking, child labor, and forced and bonded labor. And of course, these often go undetected in supply chains and more so at the moment. I think there are several factors underpinning this concern. The first is the growth of sustainable investing and impact investing. The growth of ESG indexes in particular are a testament to this. And there are now environment, social, and governance factors covering over $30 trillion worth of managed assets, and really strong evidence that ESG investments are outperforming the market, even at this point in time. This is also linked to another factor, which is the rise in employee activism. So simply put, employees are demanding that companies that they work for are no longer silent on social issues, and increasingly want to work for companies who share their values and social purpose. And consumers are heading this way too, and we see that they are increasingly voting with their wallet on social issues such as decent wages, working conditions, and exploitation alongside environmental considerations. And we see that brands are being boycotted as a result of that. That also means that, of course, transparency and traceability in supply chains are important, not just to investors, but also to employees. The third thing I think that's happening at the moment is a growth in compliance requirements. There are compliance requirements coming down the line from the EU and other countries who are looking to the UK's done with its Modern Slavery Act. And there are over 40 individual items of legislation, requirements and guidance for business and human rights right now. This is coming from the United Nations, of course, in their guiding principles on business and human rights and the Sustainable Development Goals. But it's also coming from lenders and investors, and the IFC, the International Finance Corporation, is a good example of this in its performance standards. But many businesses are not meeting their disclosure commitments or tracking these issues within their supply chains. And for example, the Business and Human Rights Resource Center, who track modern slavery statements, have found that only 29% of over 10,000 statements tracked meet the minimum legal requirements of the UK's Modern Slavery Act. So these pressures, I think, on businesses are growing, and we're not seeing that going away during the global pandemic crisis.
With that in mind, what should clients be thinking about now as they review and potentially restructure or adapt their supply chains?
Well, I think it's stating the obvious to say that COVID-19 has had a huge impact on global supply chains. But what's most alarming, though, is the impact to vulnerable workers, particularly those employed in the informal economy. According to the ILO, almost 1.6 billion vulnerable workers are in immediate danger of having their livelihoods destroyed by the pandemic. And if we look at what's happening in the garment sector in places like Bangladesh, we can get a really good sense of the impact, I think, on workers. And this is an industry that employs 3 million people, 85% of whom are women. And we've seen 3/5 of factories in Bangladesh shut as a result of the pandemic. Over 50% of Bangladesh's suppliers have seen their orders cancelled by international buyers through force majeure clauses in contracts. We've also seen buyers refusing to pay for the raw material that have already been bought by their suppliers as well. So I think that what companies do at this time to uphold their business and human rights commitments will come to define how they're seen by those investors and consumers we discussed earlier, post any recovery. So that really gives a few things to consider. First, I think, is the impact on the supply chain of any decisions made right now. This is done through consultation with suppliers and also industry peers to work on long-term solutions that will benefit everybody. As businesses start to map supply chains in a detail that perhaps they hadn't previously done, priority should be given to identifying risk indicators like contract dependence, supplier liquidity, and the types and locations of employment as well. And that last point is particularly important where there are operations in countries with high job informality and weak safeguards against things like layoffs. I mentioned that many of the risks to vulnerable workers are hidden and unreported in supply chains. In fact, I hear from project managers or legal and compliance teams that they just don't know where to look for these types of risks. So as companies review their supply chains, I think this is a good opportunity to supplement that supplier due diligence process and their codes of conduct with specific labor rights criteria, particularly as many companies are forced to find new partners and suppliers due to the pandemic. I think that some of the risks to workers and businesses really are only just starting to appear as operations begin to resume again. And an example of this is the pressure to return to work, both from employers and, of course, workers themselves, with the potential risks from health and safety that that brings, particularly where there are existing poor practices or a lack of clear guidance. We're likely to see increased or excessive working hours as well, particularly in the hospitality and construction sectors, where there are continued issues over unpaid wages and benefits. Skills gaps could be significant too, and this could lead to safety and quality risks, particularly where unskilled or poorly trained workers are brought in to fill those skills gaps.
So it sounds like businesses can really lead the way on labor rights in the countries where they're operating. Can you illustrate any examples of best practice in operations where this is being handled particularly well?
Yes, well, the picture's been tough for sure, and suppliers with poor working practices are increasing risks for workers. There's definitely been good practice shown by some international brands. And it's no coincidence, of course, that in many cases, these are the brands who are leaders already in sustainable business. We saw early moves in the crisis to shore up some of those vulnerable suppliers and protect workers by avoiding force majeure triggers in contracts and honoring existing agreements with those suppliers. This, of course, has really helped to ease the debt burden and ensure that vulnerable workers' wages are protected. Others have paid those workers' wages directly where government schemes have not existed because they've recognized that they're critical suppliers in their supply chains and any recovery would be extremely difficult without them. Or they've paid suppliers early to ease some of that pressure as well. Finally, we've seen many businesses switch to technology to maintain their compliance activity, replacing field audits with remote audits and using applications for direct communication with impacted workers.
And James, just one final question. How can control risks help businesses improve their handling of labor rights in their supply chains?
Well, we've talked already about some of the good practices that businesses are adopting to meet their human rights commitments and avoid operational delays in their chains. But I would say that there are probably three key areas in which we've been helping our clients. As I mentioned earlier, labor and human rights issues are often hidden and underreported. So we've been helping businesses to map their risk exposure across their supply chains to identify really where they should be focusing their due diligence activity. And this, of course, also helps with disclosure requirements for their modern slavery statements. Secondly, we've been developing or in some cases strengthening labor rights policies and codes of conduct and using targeted due diligence for new and existing suppliers. And I think this has really helped to identify some of those risk factors for poor employment practices and avoid exposing the supply chain to this risk. And of course, this is particularly effective when combined with broader due diligence inquiries, particularly for new and unknown suppliers. And finally, and perhaps the most rewarding for me, is that our teams have been able to adapt to the various lockdown requirements and continue to audit suppliers and speak with workers directly. And of course, we've done this by using technology, but also thanks to the fact that we have teams located in the countries where exposure is often greatest. This has been really important for our clients as we've been able to give an on-the-ground perspective to help address operational risks from unpaid wages, poor safety practices, and of course, adherence to pandemic controls.
Well, James, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
That's all for this episode of The Supply Chain. Stay updated with new episodes of The Supply Chain by subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. And be sure to check out our other podcasts as well. To follow all of Control Risk's analysis of the COVID-19 pandemic and to find out how we are helping clients build organizations that are secure, compliant, and resilient, visit controlrisk.com. See you next time.